Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dowd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world and live toxic free. It is July 28th, 2014, beautiful summer day here in Clearwater, Florida. And today we're going to talk about nanoparticles. Nanoparticles. I know everybody has heard of nanoparticles, but I bet a lot of people don't know what they are. And today I'm having our toxicologist, I want to say my resident toxicologist because he's been on so many times, Dr. Stephen Gilbert, PhD, from Toxipedia. And he has his own website, toxipedia.org, and he's the author of a book called A Small Dose of Toxicology. Hello, Dr. Gilbert.
Hi, Deborah. Good to speak to you today.
Nice to speak with you, too. So as long as we're talking about a small dose of toxicology, why don't we start out with you telling us about your translation project. Tell us more about A Small Dose of Toxicology as a book. And it's been translated into many languages. And tell us about your new translation.
Yes, we're working A Small Dose of Toxicology as an introductory toxicology text. It's free on the web at smalldoseof.org. That's smalldoseof.org. So you can download that or any chapter of the book as you like. It was recently translated into Chinese, so it's now published in China, and we have hopes that it will be an introductory text for people to learn more about toxicology and the issues in China. And our latest effort is to translate the book into Arabic. There are over 400 million Arabic speakers in the world, and we have a great toxicologist that's in the West Bank, a novelist, that's willing to translate the book. And we started an Indiegogo website to try to raise funds to complete this project. So we're looking to raise not a lot of money, but quite a bit of money at the same time. It's $14,000 to get the book translated. And it'll be available for free on our website, published by Healthy World Press as a free ebook in Arabic. So we're very hopeful to get that project done and in the next 6 to 12 months have it out there on the web. We're going to put it up. The first chapter is almost done, completed translation. It's under review right now. So we'll be posting it chapter by chapter in Arabic as the chapters become done. So I'm very excited about this project. We also have our Milestones of History poster. And so I've looked at the history of toxicology. That's translated in Arabic and Chinese as well as 10 other languages. So we're working very hard to make toxicology, which really is an international issue, and help people understand a little about the health effects of chemicals around the world.
And I will say that this is an excellent book. Anybody who hasn't already downloaded it for free, I've been talking about it on show after show. But if you haven't already downloaded it, please do, because it's an excellent book. It talks about the basics of toxicology in language that anyone can understand. This is not a dry, uninteresting chemistry book. This is living toxicology. It's about what's happening right now. It's about understanding how toxic chemicals interact in your body. It's about understanding it's about gaining the ability to tell what's toxic and what's not. And so this is just the basics, well explained, and you can have it for free. So go download this book, everybody who's listening. All right.
Thank you so very much.
You're
welcome. Learn a lot more about it right on the front page of Toxipedia, and learn how you can support our efforts to translate into Arabic.
Yeah, so that's toxipedia.org. All right.
I've actually been to Gaza twice on humanitarian issues, and it's really painful to see what's happening over there right now. And Gaza is a really very unique place. The people are wonderful, and I'm hoping that this book will also help them in their issues there.
Good, good. All right, so let's talk about nanoparticles.
Well, nanoparticles, well, that's a big subject, or a small subject, depending on how you look at it.
Well, why don't you start by telling us exactly what a nanoparticle is?
So the definition of nanotechnology is the understanding and control, and I want to emphasize understanding and control of matter. So really talking about controlling matter at the atomic level. And so it's nanotechnology is the understanding control of matter at dimensions of approximately between 1 and 100 nanometers, where unique phenomena enable novel applications. And one thing about the size, just get a little more perspective on the size. A sheet of paper is about 100,000 nanometers. So you can imagine taking that sheet of paper and dividing it up into 100,000 times. A strand of human DNA is about 2.5 nanometers in diameter. So this is one of the concerning things. Nanoparticles of the size and dimensions of DNA. So that leads to particles. Some of the particles can travel in and out of cells, potentially interact with DNA. And this is what has toxicologists worried about potential health effects. A human hair is about 80,000 to 100,000 nanometers. So you can imagine taking a piece of your hair and dividing it up 100,000 times. There are over 25 million nanometers in an inch. And this is another important fact, is a single gold atom is about a third of a nanometer. So you can see we really are manipulating matter at the atomic level. And, of course, the definition of nanometer is a millionth of a meter or a billionth of a, or a millionth of a net, sorry, a millionth of a millimeter and a billionth of a meter. So you're talking about very small material. And the unique thing is about nanoparticles is they're physical and chemical properties change. So, for example, titanium, which is usually white, at a nanoscale, it becomes clear. And this has very important implications for things like sunscreen.
Yeah, so let's just relate this to a real consumer product right now. And so sunscreen, let's talk about it, because a lot of people are putting sunscreen on their body, and titanium dioxide itself is one thing, but then when it's at a smaller size so that it's not white, but it's just clear, and you know, you don't turn white when you put on your sunscreen. How,
right,
how does that change?
People like it. That
is why people, yeah, that is why people like it. But so tell us how that is different. When you put it on your skin, what happens that's different?
Well, the concern is, so the titanium and zinc oxide, the same thing. So most sunscreens, the idea of sunscreen is to protect you against ultraviolet radiation. There's UVA and UVB ultraviolet radiation, and they require the nanoparticles are used to reflect the light. There's also chemicals can be added that absorb some of the energy from the light. So nanoparticles are great in that sense, in that the small size, they reflect light well. They become transparent, so they don't show up white on your nose, which is good. They have a large surface area ratio. So if you do apply chemicals that are helpful in sunscreen, you have more surface area for these chemicals. So they're good. They're effective products. They're very efficacious. They work well. The concern is with these nanomaterials, are they absorbed through, for example, cracks in the skin? Baby skin is a little bit different, so is there a concern about absorbing these nanoparticles into the skin? And this is something that's still being studied. A lot of indications are there not. But then you have to ask, are these things washed off into the environment? Ecologically, what happens to nanoparticles as they end up in the environment? So there's many different aspects of this. In skin breaks, or there's a rash, something like that, is there more absorption of the nanomaterials and nanoparticles into the body that way? Do they bioaccumulate? What's the effect on wildlife? So there's many different aspects of this. And by and large, we've just sort of charged ahead and started using these products, in my view, without adequate study. And as a cosmetic, the FDA could declare these chemicals as new chemical entities. So titanium, nano-sized titanium would be declared a new chemical entity, which would require more testing. The Food and Drug Administration elected not to do that. So many of these particles, even nano-sized titanium, with all its different physicochemical properties, is still considered titanium. So this was a great deal for the manufacturers and users of these materials, but I think they deserve, you know, really close scrutiny and making sure we know what we're doing with these nanomaterials.
So does, if you make a chemical or a mineral like titanium dioxide, if you make something into a smaller size, does that make it more toxic?
Well, there's not, there's potential for that because it crosses the cellular barriers more quickly. And for example, something like silver nanomaterial is a bacterial size, so it's designed to kill bacteria. So it's very effective at that, at killing bacteria. So there is, they do interact with biological properties. And the question is, are they potentially hazardous? This is particularly true for the developing organism. And, you know, toxicology is built on dose response. You know, what's your dose or exposure, and what might be the response? So how's your immune system respond to this? Does it potentially cause cancer later in life? You know, what are the issues that might be relevant to nanomaterials and nanoparticles?
and we don't know those yet. So we'll talk more about nanoparticles when we come back. My guest today is toxicologist Dr. Stephen Gilbert, and his website is toxipedia.org. Many wonderful things there, including your free copy of A Small Dose of Toxicology. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is toxicologist Dr. Stephen Gilbert. He's at toxipedia.org, where you can download a free copy of his book, A Small Dose of Toxicology. So, Dr. Gilbert, let's see. What shall we talk about next with nanoparticles?
I think the history is fun.
Yes, tell us some history, because this is not a new thing.
It's not. You're really right. So you look back historically, one of the first examples of nanomaterial was the Lycurgus cup of Rome, about 300 AD. And this has dichroic glass. So if you look at the glass straight on, it looks opaque and green. But if you shine light in it, it turns red and glows. And this is due to the nanomaterials of gold and silver that are being incorporated into the glass. In the 1600s to 1500s, stained glass windows in European cathedrals contained nanoparticles, you know, gold, chloride, and other metals that made the glass a really unique color. Damascus saber swords, you know, those high-quality swords, they were beat and known for their sharp edges, were really related to carbon nanotubes and nanowires from that. And they discovered this by looking at with scanning electron microscopes. So the whole field really didn't get started up until, 1936, right before World War II, with field emission microscopes that were developed. And these developments were essential to really understand and manipulate matter at the atomic level. Another nice one was Richard Feynman. Some of your listeners might have heard of him. He's a noted physicist. He wrote a paper called There's Plenty of Room at the Bottom, and gave one of the first lectures, I think it was in 1959, and on the technology at the atomic scale, and sort of predicted a lot of this. Scanning tunneling microscopes developed in 81. In 1985, Buckminster fullerene, C60, or the buckyballs, were discovered. And this was at Rice University. And this was really a big deal, because nanoparticles and nanomaterial, you could store different types of chemicals inside these buckyballs. And then in 1986, atomic force microscopes, you can see that things really started picking up in the 80s with the discovery of different materials and really the technology to manipulate these. 1991 was carbon nanotubes, and carbon nanotubes have had a huge impact on materials. Many of the materials we use now have carbon fiber in them. Just for example, I was just reading over the weekend that the Tour de France, a great bicycle race in France, just ended. But one of the issues has been that the bicycles are carbon fiber, and these carbon fibers have a lot of nanotubes, and instead of bending in a crash, they spike shatter. So they're very strong, very lightweight, and that's what carbon nanotubes are all about. But they also have some undesirable properties. They don't sort of bend and absorb some of the collisions in a bicycle racing, and injuries seem to be more severe. So that's just one of the implications, sort of the side implications of nanomaterials. And carbon nanotubes, we fly in them, airplanes, the new Boeing 787, tennis rackets, all kinds of materials are starting to use carbon nanotube materials.
So what exactly is a carbon nanotube?
So a carbon nanotube is you roll carbon very thin, like one atom of wine. You can make it a little bit thicker if you like, but then you roll them up, see, using the atomic force instruments, and that's the roll that makes them very strong, very lightweight, and you can transmit electricity through them. They have a lot of really interesting properties. And the concern, though, from a health perspective, is related to asbestos, because these nanotubes have very sharp edges and look a lot like asbestos fibers. And we know from experience that asbestos inhaled can cause mesothelioma, a fatal lung cancer. So the concern was with nanotubes, these carbon nanotubes, is would that be a potential hazard, with particularly for workers that are responsible for sanding, for grinding, for making nanomaterials up. So is this a worker-related injury? And that's, by and large, an issue across the board with nanomaterials. Are there worker issues that we need to be concerned about?
Do nanoparticles exist in nature, or are we making particle sizes that are just only man-made?
A lot more of them, but they do exist in nature. They're naturally occurring. In our industrial process occurs some of them. For example, diesel exhaust out of trucks will have a lot of nanomaterial in them. And this is particularly a concern for around ports with a lot of trains and truck traffic going in and out of it. And this becomes an environmental justice issue. People living near the ports are exposed to these nanomaterials. And the concern about the nanomaterials, as I mentioned before, they have a large surface volume to ratio to their size. So they have a very large surface volume, and other materials can be stuck on the surface of these nanomaterials, like polyaromatic hydrocarbons can coat the nanomaterial. You inhale those things into your lungs, and then it can be distributed throughout the body. Nanomaterials are also natural. They can be sea spray, for example, along the ocean waters. Volcanoes will produce nanomaterials, or nanoparticles, I should say. So they're both naturally occurring, but as usual with humans, we tend to exaggerate some phenomena, so now we're making all kinds of new and unique novel. Like, there's no natural process that created carbon nanotubes. This is entirely manufactured material. And then, although we have silver and some other products that are potentially nano-sized, we're making them and putting them in a whole host of products now.
It seems like that this is something that is more difficult to identify than some other toxic things that you can, like, smell formaldehyde, for example. If you know what formaldehyde smells like, you could identify it. But how would one identify that they're being exposed to a nanoparticle?
Well, you raise a really interesting point, Deborah. There's no good rules and regulations that sort of says that the manufacturer has to show the product, has to demonstrate or acknowledge there's nanomaterials in the product. So that's not required. The FDA, I just noticed in sort of thinking about this, our talk today, on June 24th, the FDA came out with some new guidelines around nanomaterials in cosmetics. And I should just bring this a good time. See if I can find this quote from Couture.
Actually, we need to go to break in about 20 seconds. How many nanoseconds is that? So you can find it during the break, and we'll come back and talk about that.
That would be great.
Today we're talking about nanoparticles with Dr. Stephen Gilbert. His website is toxipedia.org. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and we'll go to break and come back and find out what Dr. Gilbert would like to tell us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Dr. Stephen Gilbert. His website is toxipedia.org. That's TOXIPEDIA.org. And you can go download a free copy of his very excellent book, A Small Dose of Toxicology. So, Dr. Gilbert, did you find what you were looking for?
I did. But before I go there, I just want to mention one other thing. There's a great called Prey by Michael Crichton that has nanotechnology, nanoparticles as the theme of the book. So if you're listening, just looking for a good sort of summer read, it's Prey by Michael Crichton.
Is that P-R-A-Y or P-R-E-Y?
P-R-E-Y.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay, good. All right, thank you. It's a fun book.
It's a fun read, and so I'd recommend that.
Okay.
So I just wanted to, I think we were talking a little bit about consumer products.
Right.
And I just want to mention, we can talk more about that, particularly related to silver. For example, one of the products is a bear, a little cuddly bear for your infant, and the product has nano silver particles in it, and it's related. The tag on it says it's clinically proven to be safer because it has killed bacteria, so you don't have things growing on your fuzzy bear. Now, the problem with that is, what do kids do? They suck on the ears of the bear, they mouth the bear. So is there a possibility that the kid is absorbing silver nanoparticles? And what are the potential consequences of oral exposure to nanoparticles? So you might think that these products are all tested before they're put on the market. That's not the case. So let me just read this quote from the Consumer Product Safety Commission. The potential, and the first part of it sounds good, the potential safety and health risk of nanomaterials, as with other compounds that are incorporated into consumer products, can be assessed under existing CPSC statutes, regulations, and guidelines. Here's the catch. Neither Consumer Product Safety Act nor the Federal Hazardous Substances Act requires the pre-market registration or approval of products. So none of those acts require the pre-market registration or approval. Thus, it is usually not until a product has been distributed in commerce that the CPSC would evaluate a product's potential risk to the public. So in my view, we have some of this stuff backwards, where these products are not tested before they're on the market, and they're used, and then we decide if there's any potential harm with that. Another example with silver materials, silver particles, is they're used in socks to kill the bacteria around our feet. But the problem with this is what happens when, you know, your feet have cracks in them, things like that, and are these materials being absorbed into you? As they're being exposed to your feet. And when you wash the material, the silver nanoparticles, some of them will leave the socks or other fabrics and get into the waste stream, go down to sewage treatment plants, and then out into the water system. So what are the consequences of silver nanoparticles from an ecological perspective? So I think that, you know, I think this has been one of the huge struggles from a regulatory perspective is how to manage the explosion of nanomaterials and nanoproducts that are products that use nanomaterials in our day-to-day lives.
But there's no regulations for them to apply.
Right. It's been a really tough struggle for that. The EPA would use the Toxic Substance Control Act. It was passed in 76, but we all know that that law is pretty broken, so a lot of these materials are not well tested. It's very difficult for the EPA to regulate this. Nano silver particles, they've tried a little bit to regulate them as pesticides, as bactericides, which is really what they are. But, you know, the advertisement for the products will say this naturally occurring, natural silver-based nanotechnology is used to reduce bacteria in these products. There's kitchen silverware, all kinds of new products are coming out there with silver nanoparticles in it to reduce bacteria. And I want to emphasize bacteria is everywhere. Our tabletops, our everything is coated with a thin layer of bacteria. And the most important thing is just use soap and water to keep it clean. Don't use antibiotic-based products or silver-based products for bacteria. We're trying to reduce bacteria in the world unless there's a real specific need for it. The soap and water does a great job.
I agree. I had a guest on who wrote a book, a doctor who wrote a book called Missing Microbes, and he was talking about how we, because of antibiotics and antimicrobials, we've lost like 30% of the amount of different types of microorganisms that we should have in our bodies that are helping us. And so I could see that silver would do the same thing.
Our bodies are very finely tuned, and, you know, we're used to a lot of different kinds of bacteria, and we have a little ecosystem of bacteria inside of us, and, you know, nanomaterials and antibiotics really disrupt those systems. And I think we have to be really cautious about that and, you know, minimize our exposure to antibiotics, particularly things like soaps that, triclosan, they just are shown not to be efficacious. And what you really need to do is just keep things as clean as possible with soap and water.
Yeah. That'll do it.
When my grandchildren come in the house, first thing they have to do is wash their hands.
Yeah, so you mentioned that before. I remember that. and I would also point out, I always like to say that doctors and hospitals just scrub. They scrub with hot water and soap, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so there's no antimicrobials. All right.
Nope.
So that does the job, and it has for many, many years, many decades, centuries. Anyway. So should we be concerned about all nanoparticles? Anything that's a nanoparticle, is it automatically bad because it's a nanoparticle?
I don't think so. I think there's a lot of good uses for nanomaterials. There's certainly going to be, like, I just had solar panels put on my house, and I'm sure those solar panels use nanotechnology. So there's some really excellent uses. I think the concern is that we overuse them. Do we really need nano silver particles in our socks and in our bears or for our kids or the blanket for the kid? I think we just have to be a little bit judicious about where do we want to use nanoparticles. They're widely used in our phones. There's great advantage to them. Small size is important. They use less energy for cell phones, which is great. They have potential to revolutionize batteries. So there's a lot of great uses for nanomaterials. I think, and then, well, planes is another one because of light, and cars are using more carbon fiber material. So there's a lot of important uses, but I think we just need to be aware and take more of a precautionary approach to when we use them and ask what our exposure is. Do we really want to be exposed to nanomaterials every time we turn around, like our cosmetics? How much nanomaterials do we want to use in our cosmetics? There's some that would be really useful. You know, maybe titanium and zinc oxide are safe and efficacious for sure, but do we really? How much do we need to use? How careful? In my view, it's always precautionary that we should try to reduce exposures when we can to materials that are not necessary. Antibiotics being a classic example of that.
Yeah, and also there's a big difference between using nanoparticles in cosmetics that you're putting on your skin and using nanoparticles in a solar panel that's on top of your house in terms
exactly,
of one's exposure.
Technology.
Yeah, and so it's not necessarily that the technology is really bad. It's mostly overuse, as you said, or having too much use in places where it really doesn't need to be. And then that overloads our bodies. But if we can use these technologies judiciously and appropriately, then they can be beneficial. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. And my guest today is Dr. Stephen Gilbert. And he's the author of A Small Dose of Toxicology, which you can download for free at his website, toxopedia.org. And we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. And my guest today is Dr. Stephen Gilbert, toxicologist and the author of A Small Dose of Toxicology. You can download your free copy at toxopedia.org. And also, if you go to toxopedia.org, you can find out about his most recent translation of this book into Arabic and make a contribution there if you want. It's how many languages has it been translated into?
It's in English, Chinese, and working on Arabic, and our Spanish is going to be our next one.
Yeah. It's a great book. It should totally be international. It's great.
Actually, it's being translated into German. A colleague has just started translating the German on his own. So the German I'm not sure when it'll be done, but that's also in the works.
Good, good. I think that my book, Toxic Free, is now in 5 languages or something like
that. Wow, that's exciting.
Yeah, I'm very happy that has happened. So I just want to... I'm looking at your nanoparticles page on Toxopedia, and I just want to say a few of the known health risks. Like in sunscreen, it's been known to damage human colon cells, damage brainstem cells in mice, and penetrate the human skin, entering the bloodstream, posing a threat to the heart, liver, and red blood cells. It can travel from mothers to unborn fetuses, and these are things that are known. Health risks, right? There were those studies. And then,
right.
Yeah, so it's been used and it's being used in so many products. And as we said earlier, that it's not necessarily on the label. It's not necessarily advertised and not very well understood. So in this last segment, let's talk about how consumers can minimize their risk for nanoparticles.
I think the important thing is just be aware of what products might have nanomaterials in them and where you're going to receive the greatest amount of exposure. And I think you mentioned two of the really important ones are sunscreens and general class of cosmetics because we're applying them right to our skin. And manipulation materials that might get into the atmosphere is important if you inhale them and in the water supply. But I think cosmetics are probably the most important one. They're also used in some medicines, things like that. So I think to try to look at some of the websites where the products might be listed, there's a really good website called nano.gov. So it's nano.gov. It's tried to produce and put some of these materials together. So there are websites that list some of the manufacturers, some of the products with nanomaterials. But I think the FDA is trying to get their handle on this issue. But I think... looking at cosmetics and really demanding of your legislative folks to pass rules and regulations that require labeling. Like, how many people know that there's nanomaterials in their sunscreens? There's titanium or zinc oxide, titanium dioxide and zinc oxide in nanoscale in their sunscreens. You know, they're not required to label them as such. And also, if the size of the particles can be vary widely, so how much control is the manufacturer used over the particle size, and what chemicals might be attached to the particles, the other really important question, because of the surface area issue, there's greater surface area to volume ratio, so you get more exposure to any chemicals that are attached to these products. And these products, because they're small size, become great carriers, they move the chemical into the cell, and you get exposure and potential hazard effects from that. So it's, you know, from a toxicological point of view, nanomaterials are complicated because of the variation in size, ability to carry other materials, the change in physical chemical properties. And my recommendation, always on the precautionary side, is try to limit exposure unless you really need it.
I completely agree with that on every type of toxic chemical there is, or, I mean, anything that's unknown. I think that one of the biggest problems here with nanoparticles is that the health effects, we're just starting to look at them, and so that we don't know what the health effects are. We don't know they're in the product. And when you were just talking about the different sizes of the nanoparticles, it suddenly occurred to me that nanoparticles are a whole range of different sizes in a range, but they're all within this very small infinitesimal size, but they're not all exactly the same size. And
they're not,
so,
and it's how the manufacturing process works, how exact it's been. And some people have fudged by calling ultrafine particles, which are not quite meet the definition of nano size. And remember, saying something of a nanoparticle is sort of an arbitrary definition. They just said it was 1 to 100 nanometers. So it's 101 nanometers in nanomaterial. So there's a wide range of concern about how they're manufactured and the size, whether they're clumped together or not. And I really want to emphasize, too, the occupational health issue. The World Health Organization put out a statement that the people that research, develop, manufacture, package, handle, transport, use, and dispose of nanomaterials will be the most exposed and therefore most likely to suffer any potential human health harms. As such, worker protection should be paramount with any nanomaterial oversight regime. And I'd like to add to that, we should be doing a better job of studying the workers because they are sort of the sentinels, because their exposure is going to be greater, and we can learn a great deal about potential health consequences of nanomaterials by studying the workers.
I would totally agree with that, too. That's exactly where they would be. So
yeah, I think that's where the exposure would be greatest. You got, you know, the greatest volume of material there and the greatest manipulation of the product, both into the atmosphere as well as into the water supply or the surface area around that manufacturing process.
So I was also thinking about what you said about the nanoparticle silver washing off, and then it would go down into the water system. So would you think that some of those nanoparticles are getting into our drinking water supplies?
I don't think anybody's really looked into that. One of the challenges is actually when you do these studies is trying to quantitate the amount of nanomaterial that's in the medium. So trying to look for it in water or look for it in the food or look for it in soil is challenging. But I think that's something we need to be spending more time on. I think that's one of the challenges that we should take on is quantitation of the nanomaterials in different media so that we know what our potential exposure is. You know, silver has been used for a long time. It was used in medicine for a long time as an antibiotic, and for example, and was used, sort of fell off after World War II when antibiotics got more widely used. But now it's sort of coming back, particularly in wound dressing. So I actually use silver nanomaterial in wound dressing. And it's generally, people say, or, you know, convinced that silver nano exposure is not harmful because of its application in medicine and use in bandages. But still, it's not clear exactly where all the silver nanoparticles are going in the biological system. So it needs to be a lot more study, either animal studies or human health studies, that try to quantitate where the nanomaterial is going in our bodies.
so much to learn, so much to, some, you know, in some ways, you know, you and I had both been doing, working in this field for many years in our own respective ways and decades. And yet the, I keep learning more and more, but I keep finding that there's more and more to know. And I would say that probably there's, we're just at the tip of the iceberg about what we know about toxics.
Yeah, and I really discouraging to me is that, you know, we know better than this. You know, we put asbestos and lead out into the environment to great detrimental effects to many people. You know, thousands of people have died from mesothelioma, from asbestos exposure. Many kids have been harmed by lead exposure, as well as you down the alphabet soup of chemicals. And what we don't need to do is add nanomaterial into that. So my view is we should have a much more robust program to study the potential ecological and health effects of nanomaterials before we put them in our socks and our shoes and in our teddy bears and all kinds of other products. We should have a pretty good understanding of the life cycle of these products, how they're manufactured, where they go when they're in the products, what, how do we dispose of them, and what happens to them in the waste stream, and what happens, of course, from an ecological and human health standpoint.
I totally agree. I just, there's so much that it, you were talking earlier about the Consumer Product Safety Commission making a statement. And you know, this was something that I read many, many years ago from the Consumer Product Safety Commission was one of the first places I went when I was looking for information about toxics. And it really is, most people don't understand that, that there isn't preliminary testing, that what happens is that the Consumer Product Safety Commission can't do anything until the product is in use and consumers start writing to the Consumer Product Safety Commission to tell them that there's something wrong. And that's
right.
Just backwards. It's just backwards.
It is backwards, and we need a more precautionary approach. So we put human health and ecological health first before our, you know, using some of these products. So we really got to ask, do we really need it? Do we really need antibiotics in our soap? It's, you know, one of the great examples of that. Do we really need antibiotics in our teddy bears or nanoparticles, nanosilver particles in our teddy bears and our socks? There's some things we just don't need. They actually put nanomaterial in the washing machine, so it would add a little bit of silver nanoparticle in the wash water. So do we really need to go there with some of these products?
No, we don't. We don't. Well, Dr. Gilbert, it's been a pleasure talking to you yet again, and I'm sure that we'll talk to you a lot more.
Thank you, Deborah. Have a good day.
Okay, you too. So you've been listening to ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com. You can go to Dr. Gilbert's website, which is Toxipedia.org. Get his book, A Small Dose of Toxicology. It's absolutely free. You can also go to ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com and find out who's going to be on tomorrow and this week. I always have the list of all the guests this week for the week. You can also listen to this show again. You can listen to any other shows that have been on because they're all archived. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad. Be well.